on Cork's Good Times.
Red FM.
All right, welcome along to the Big Red Bench here on Cork's Good Times. Red FM, Dan Casey here with you for the next hour, keeping you up to date with a few bits and pieces of sport on this weekend. A huge, huge night for Cove's Callum Walsh as he takes on Fernando Vargas Jr. as the co-main event on the massive Canelo versus Crawford undercard on Netflix. Stevie G, you might want to set your alarm as his ring walk is expected about 3 a.m. Irish time. We're going to go back to last night though here in Cork in Virgin Media Park as Munster drew 28-all against Bath in pretty poor conditions. Our very own John McCarthy was on commentary there and he chatted to his co-commentator Tom Savage after the game.
It is finished. Munster 28, Bath 28 here at Virgin Media Park in tonight's final pre-season. I'm joined by Tom Savage of Three Red Kings. You can follow Three Red Kings across all social media platforms. Tom, first things first, it's a draw, but at one stage Munster had a 2-try lead. So I suppose, before we talk about the positives, disappointment at the concession of those two late tries.
That did not seem like a game that Munster should have been getting away from them, really. They'll be disappointed with the manner of the final 10-15 minutes, really, which really got away from them. For a number of different reasons, started losing collisions, a few iffy kicks, a few iffy chases. That's how games tend to get away from me against a good side like Bath, who finished very strongly. They had probably a stronger field team on the field at the end than what they did at the start and the middle, and deserved their comeback, I think, overall. But I think Munster will be quite disappointed because there was a really good win there at one point. But overall though, more positives than negatives.
Who were the Munster players that stood out for you tonight? There was a lot of players from the academy, some from the fringes, guys we're going to be seeing a lot more of hopefully in the URC, but the players that stood out for you specifically?
I thought Tom O'Hearn was fantastic. JJ Hanrahan had an unbelievable game. Craig Casey looked great off the bench as well. Some of the younger guys, Gordon Wood, really impressed me. I thought some of Ben O'Connor's work as well on the wing was fantastic. I thought overall, like, Munster's work in the collisions was fantastic. Ruan Quinn, Alex Kendall, were very, very impressive there. So look, I think for Munster, look, there's lots to take on the positive side of the ledger. They're just going to look at the manner of how that game got away from them. I know it was a 90-minute game with three periods. If it was a regular 80-minute game, Munster win it. But I think that's going to be the key work on for the coaches in the aftermath of this, which is that should have been a win against a good bad side. So there are positives, but there's enough wrinkles there that they'll take a lot out of that as well.
If you're Clayton McMillan, have you seen the beginnings and the buds of the way he's going to want to play in around the fringes?
Oh, very much so. Look, I think that, like, Munster's big work on this season, what they've spoken about internally, is playing with a lot more punch and power through the forwards, and we certainly saw that. A lot of Munster's best work came from really solid forward pressure where you had, you know, direct carries off 9, off 10 with good ruck support, and, you know, getting your big ball carriers on the ball and getting, letting them be physical. That created opportunities early and often for Munster, so they'll take that as a huge positive. But I think that will be a big element of how Clayton McMillan wants this Munster side to play. But it was a set piece, scrum, line out, maul in particular, that for me were very, very good, and they'll be the things that will be the big positives to go, look, we did this against a very good Bath side, let's bring this up against the Scarlets in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, let's not forget it's Bath and Gloucester that they played over the last couple of weeks. You've seen both of those games, so the positives are up against really good quality English Premiership opposition. Is that going to stand to them more when it comes to that Scarlets game?
I think so. Look, I think sometimes you can take two routes with your pre-season. You can play a much weaker opposition, run in a few tries, you know, get a bit of confidence that way, or you can start to take on big, physical, like, again, very, very good English packs. Like, this Bath side, it won the double last year. They won a Challenge Cup and the Gallagher Premiership. So there's lots of quality all the way through their team. You could see that throughout that we'll say the last half of this game, just how good they are. So Munster will take a lot from that, a little bit more so than if they were playing, you know, maybe a Pro D Dos side or maybe a lower level opposition where you put them away with 40 or 50 points. You learn a lot more about yourself physically, mentally and tactically, which I think, given the weather conditions today for this one, they learned an awful lot more about themselves than what they would have on maybe a kind of a 50-point throw-around.
As Work mentioned, the conditions were awful at certain stages with the wind and the rain. Handling that and considering the surface that they were on, is again, they've had a difference. It was totally different in Gloucester last week. Will benefit all those players again.
Again, it looked like a URC game, yeah. You know, for the most part, how this game played out. didn't look like a pre-season game, and that's a huge part of, you know, building yourself up for that URC, especially away from home against Scarlets first up. It's going to be difficult. The weather conditions are likely not going to be great, so it's about making sure you're sharp tactically and physically. And one thing Munster will have after this is a lot of sore bodies, because this is a big physical Bath side all the way through, and Munster handled them very, very well for the most part. And I think, you know what, I'm going to say 55%, 60% positive. They'll be more than happy, I'd say, with how the game played overall, despite the result, which, despite being pre-season, is important. You want to build momentum. You don't want to let, you know, pre-season slip away from you, as has happened in previous years. But I think there's lots to like from a Munster perspective from this friendly, more so than the negative.
And just finally, are we okay to be cautiously optimistic about an improved Munster season, even at this early stage?
I think so. Look, pre-season is always its own animal to a certain extent. You want to have as much positivity to look forward to internally for the squad as much as anything, to go, look, we've done this in pre-season, we can bring this into the opening of the season. But for Munster, they've got 5 games to start this block of pre-season, 5 or 6 games. They have to win 3-4 of those minimum to get into the position to not have to be panicking at the back end of the season like what happened last year. So you have to start strongly. What you want is games that push you. Last season, I watched Munster here against Gloucester, and they were all over the place. And the game really was all over the place. So you could see that the start of the season, starting the way that it did, wasn't that much of a surprise. Here, Munster were very structured. Munster played with a very strong set piece. And yeah, look, inexperience at the end. I think there's a lot of young men in the field at the end. Probably let that game slip away. But I think if you look at it on the whole, I think there's a lot to be positive about coming into the new season. Not anything to be doing cartwheels about, but maybe thinking about one.
Exactly. Let's think about those cartwheels over the coming weeks. Tom Savage, follow on his 3 Red Kings platform. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much.
Great stuff from Jur and Tom. We're going to hear now from the Munster head coach, Clayton McMillan.
Clayton, first of all, welcome to Munster. Apart from the concession of those 2 late tries, did the positives far outweigh the negatives for you tonight?
Well, I think so. There was, I was started really well. Set piece went extremely well. We were able to build pressure at the right ends of the field. So there was a lot to like. We got a little bit messy in that second 30. I sort of managed to claw it back a little bit in the last 30, with the exception of those 2 tries. But context for us anyway was that we had a number of young guys out there in that last 30, and we all would have learned a lot of important lessons around closing out a game. So there's certainly a lot more positives.
You have to take the conditions into consideration as well. It's not an easy night to play rugby, an attractive rugby. But I thought your players adapted, both sets of players adapted, both Munster teams adapted very well.
Yeah, they were certainly tough conditions. To be fair, we probably got the better of them in the first 30 minutes when, it was really howling down and the wind was at its strongest. But I think that's the key. We're going to have days that are like that, and we have to have a balance around our game, around having the ability to play but also go to a tactical kicking game or a territorial game and be comfortable playing without the ball. And we did that at times tonight, but at others we were a little bit untidy, and we gave up a few penalties and some errors that gifted them position and territory, and they were good enough to make some of those count.
You talked an awful lot about developing a culture here at Munster. You've come from the Chiefs. I saw a little bit of Chiefs rugby tonight at different stages. We're going to see more of that as the year goes on.
Oh well, I hope so. There's some talented rugby players here, and Mike Pendergast has been really trying to develop a mentality around players expressing themselves and holding on to the ball when we've earned the right to do so. So really I'm just here to again just be an extension of that, and there were times tonight that looked really good, and like I said, there's still some work on.
One of the most important things as the new Munster head coach is building depth, because as the year goes on you're going to lose some important players. It looks like from the academy, is that one of the attractions for taking this job, that you've seen the emergence of some academy players that can take that step up over the next couple of years?
Oh, to be fair, I didn't know a hell of a lot about the young guys coming through the system before I came here, but I trusted the advice of people that had been here, that, you know, they were confident that there was some good young talent coming through our system. And that's proven to be the case. You know, I think we used 37 players tonight. Mm. We asked for the 330 so that we could give each and every one of them time out in the middle. You know, it's always nice to win pre-season games, but I think it's more important for us knowing that we need to build depth. We need to give people opportunity to play and feel what it's like out there. No better lesson than being out on the field. So we've done that over the last 2 weeks. We have an internal hit out where a number of guys will get more minutes, and we hope that that will put us in good stead.
Yep. And just finally, you're happy going into that Scarlets game now, where you are, where you want to be?
Yeah, well, we're trending in the right direction, I think, but it's still 2 weeks away, and 2 weeks, 1 week is a long time in rugby, so I think there's lots of improvement in us, and but we're looking forward to that, to Scarlets. But, you know, like, we'll head down, backside up for the next week and look for the growth that we need to get better.
And you're also caught up the Bat head coach, Johan van Graan.
Johan, firstly, the way your team came back, considering the conditions, considering you were two tries down, hugely encouraging for you.
Yeah, look, this team has become tough to beat, and that's the main thing we took out of the game. Against the wind in the first 45 minutes, and, you know, we were 14-0 down, and then we went 14-7 and then down 28-7 and then score three tries away from home. Now, very glad about that, and this is a tough place to come to. Obviously, I know because of past experience. So, look, it's a pre-season game. I think both sides will take the positives out of this and move forward.
And considering the poor conditions and the three periods and the turnover of players, you got a good look at some fringe players tonight. You have your established internationals, but from your point of view and coaching point of view, how important have the last couple of weeks been for those guys that you'll want to kick on this year?
No, look, specifically a lot of the younger lads, a lot of them started the last two games, last week against Glasgow and now against Munster. And look, it's a squad effort. Last year in the Prem Cup, we used 49 players, so it's important you give a lot of guys an exposure. And look, a big contingent of our squad flew back on yesterday, back to Bath. So some of them will play next weekend and some will be back for the start of the Premiership. So look, very satisfying from the young lads. And the only way you learn is when you play. And we took quite a bit out of that game.
Considering the fantastic year you had last year, obviously the European Cup, the Investec, that's what everybody's going to have eyes on you this year to kick on. You have the squad and the talent and the depth. Is it just a case of building on the momentum of last year and doing the same things again?
No, I think we start on zero. Look, the Champions Cup's an amazing competition, but that's still a very long way from now. So we'll just stick to our process, take it week by week. We've had a fantastic week in Ireland. The people of Cork have been tremendous to us. We really enjoyed the time in Fota Island, and we're staying in town, and we've just enjoyed this week for what it is, and it's always great to come to Ireland and great to come to Munster.
So from your time of enjoying time over here in Munster, you're able to continue that on this time again?
Yeah, it's always a special place to come back to. We as a family loved our time here, and as I've said on many occasions, our little girl was born here, and she's Irish, and that will always be our connection with specifically Limerick and Munster.
Clayton McMillan has taken over a very big squad with has lost a lot of experience, like Peter Romani, Conor Murray are gone from it. What you saw tonight from the French players and the younger players, do you think that he has the raw material to build here?
That's for him to say. I'll leave that to him. He's a fantastic coach, it's an incredible privilege to coach Munster. So I'll let him deal with that, and I'll just focus on what I need to do at Bath.
And just finally for me, you obviously have a very talented squad. You obviously have ambitions for the coming year, but it all starts one game at a time with you, as always, as it always was when you were here in Munster. Same for Bath.
Very similar. We've got two games next week. We've got a doubleheader on Friday night and on Saturday. So, you know, we'll use all of our squad next week. And, if you look at the back end of May, you need to be in a good position to get into playoffs. And May is a very long time away from now. So, we'll just take it week by week and let's see where we're at.
I'm not sure, was it yourselves or Munster who negotiated the extra 10 minutes onto the match, but you were fairly glad of them, I'd say, the two tries and the... You're coming up towards the 90th minute, kind of sends you home with a bit more a pep in your step, I'd imagine.
Yeah, look, it was Kazi and I spoke early in the week, and you know, they proposed the 3x30, and look, it's Munster's home game. They came to our field last season, so yeah, look, you've got to use the time available, and tonight it was 90 minutes, and you know, I thought that fourth try of us was fantastic of the kickoff, and then. You know, Munster came back at us, and we defended our line very, very well. And yeah, look, you've got to play what's in front of you. And yeah, it was a big tussle. And look, 28 all is a fair reflection of the game.
Was it? I suppose the Munster connections, was that what brought you to Cork for this week to kind of do that camp in Fota? And how has it been for you?
Yeah, firstly, you know, last season we decided we're going to play home and away for 2 years against Munster. So last season they came to the Rec. It was great to see old friends and similar this week. And yeah, Cork's a special place to come to, and you know, there's quite a few people that have got connections in Ireland, and the team thoroughly enjoyed it. I enjoyed the connection time. We played some nice golf and did some fishing, and you know, enjoyed all the facilities that Ireland offered. And yeah, we've had a really good week.
Well, we'll park that one and we'll move on, but we'll stick with the rugby as our very own Sarah McKenzie Foley caught up with the Munster women's captain Maeve O'Leary during the week to talk everything about Munster's Interpro win and the Women's Rugby World Cup.
I am delighted to be joined on the Big Red Bench by Munster senior women's captain and Interpro winner 2025, Maeve O'Leary. Maeve, huge congratulations, first of all, on this massive win. I presume you've recovered from the celebrations at this stage. How are they?
Thank you so much, Sarah. Great. They were great. I am recovered. I actually was over at the World Cup in Brighton last weekend, and some of the celebrations did continue over there. There was a crew of the Munster girls, but no, it was brilliant. It was, yeah, like, I think everything we could have asked for, down to like our performance on the day, which we were really, really happy with. And I think we probably peaked at the right time with that. So to be able to take the win away from home as well, which is, I suppose, always a little bit of an extra ask onto the challenge. And just to do it for, you know, our girls that are retiring this year as well, it was absolutely class and just a great occasion, and we certainly enjoyed all of the celebrations.
Absolutely, as you should. And you prevented Leinster from winning their third Interpro title in a row. What does that mean to you and your teammates? Because Munster have been so close to that over the last couple of years. And as you say, there are some girls that, you know, wouldn't have got another chance at it. So what did that mean to you? You kind of touched on it there, but I'd love to hear a bit more.
Yeah, it's a great question, because we, you know, you go into the Interpro, and I think we did a culture day at the start of our kind of training back in July. And, you know, one of the things was, what do you want to get out of this Interpro? And obviously people had written down like to win the Interpros. That's obviously the goal. But I think we really did focus in on growth and connection in our squad. They were two of the big things, especially with the year being in it. There is that World Cup, so you do have, you know, a younger contingent, and there's plenty more girls getting opportunities coming up the line. So growth and connection was really important for us, and we actually just targeted each individual performance. And I think, like, hats off to all the coaches and the players, but we really did our analysis and like our previews and reviews for each game. And I think that everyone probably who's coming out of Munster camp this year can say like they've learned loads and developed loads, which is really like the key thing here. And I think that focus point on that growth connection and like the preview and review and actually really working as connecting as a squad throughout the season just brought us to that Interpro win. I think there was, you know, some tough times in the campaign where maybe we were really definitely challenged away from home up in Ulster, and those matches definitely brought, I think, like that focus point, like, it really narrowed it even more. So we had a nice confidence and a good feeling going up the road to Leinster on match day for the final. And I think we knew our ability, and it was just then about actually doing it on the day. But I think overall, like, we really focused this season on like growth, connection, development, And I do think that that's where our performances kind of came out of and the win. So it was even a bigger picture, but it's so great to have that cup back down in Munster. And hopefully we'll keep it down there for a while.
Fingers crossed, absolutely. So it sounds like you were feeling quite confident then as a group heading up, and you felt like you had your homework done. Obviously, I know you'd beaten Leinster in the group stages, but I suppose that's no guarantee, you know, and in a final anything can happen.
Yeah, definitely. And like, that's something we really called out early in the week, that it's a final. Nothing can be taken for granted. Like, on any given day, things can just go wrong for your team, whether it's the bounce of the ball or the referee. But I think we really focused on what we could control. And we just, you know, we did our work around analysis and looked at that as much as we can. But I think we probably hadn't hit the level that we wanted to as a squad either. So Matt and Briggsy and Leah and Eddie really focused on that week, or coaches on where we could actually peak and become better. And I think everything did just come together on the day. And I think there was a really nice drive in the girls on the day, and or I suppose our softer skills and our detail was came out great on the day as well. And there's lots of variables that you kind of can't control, but we wanted just to look after our own house. And we felt if we could do that we could drive it on and bring the cup home. So it was by no, I suppose, like, you know, miss, like, no, it was from the hard work, I suppose, we kind of put in. And, you know, I can't applaud the girls enough for what they did put in this season. But it's never easy going off the road to Leinster to play them at home. And hats off. At the end, they came back and, you know, really challenged us. And there's things, if the campaign was longer, we'd be taking away and looking at, right, how can we prevent that stuff and look at that full 80-minute game. But, yeah, no, just delighted that it kind of came off the way it did on the day as well, for more hard work.
Yeah, I didn't want to ask you about that, because I suppose for those that maybe saw the scoreline afterwards, that probably betrays the reality a bit of how you felt as a squad during the match. I imagine there were times, particularly as you said, towards the end, where it felt like a bit of a battle out there. You know, you're not really thinking about the scoreline at that point, I guess. It's more big picture, as you said, it's all about the performance.
Definitely. And I didn't ever once feel on the field like, oh, safe now or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Or second game against Leinster, we were 33-10 up, I think, and it came back to 33-22 within about 10 minutes. And like, that just shows the team that they are, and the threats that they do have. So that was definitely the case on the field as well on the 31st or 30th of August. Like, we definitely wanted to ensure we could get the job done, and there was that like sense of threat, absolutely, in the last 15 minutes. I think they went over for three scores in the space of, you know, that last 20 minute block. And that's something we have worked on throughout the Interpro, is how do we go from a 20 minute or a 40 minute team to that 60-80 minute, because that's how important it is. So we did also speak about a fast start, and I think that we got that, and that definitely gave us that advantage. But like you said, it's not over until the final whistle. And you can't take a team like Leinster for granted at all.
And in, I suppose, your leadership role, you know, when we first spoke after the very first game in the Interpros, you were talking about how the team was already gelling. And you mentioned earlier that there was a younger contingent maybe than we're used to. How proud are you of the way the group has gelled across the campaign? And as you said, you know, even though it was a clean sweep, there were tough moments, particularly in that game against Leinster. They put such a physical fight up to you. How do you see this unit of players going forward? What do you think that you can all achieve together?
Yeah, I couldn't be more proud of the group. I think they've been brilliant. And it's been a really big message that, you know, it's a really short campaign. So the opportunities, sometimes they're smaller than if you were going to play 12 games. Mm. So it's been a really big thing around our group that it's not about the 23 or the 26 that are going on the bus on match day. It's about that wider group. And it was actually, Dervnik Avard said it, but it was our last session before a Leinster game. And the defence that the team put up in training against that starting team was incredible. Like, they nearly made a show of like what we were trying to do. And it just shows the ability and the strength that is in the group. And like, I know that, you know, we spoke about, you know, the World Cup being on and all, but the I suppose the learnings and development that these players can bring back to their clubs across Munster is going to be incredible. And that's like the bigger picture. Obviously, you're thinking about, right, grassroots, where are all these girls starting from? But just so proud of everyone's like efforts this season. They've been unreal, and I just know we 10 first caps this season, and I can nearly name off the top of my head like another handful of girls that will be coming through next season and looking at those first caps. And you know, I've been in the position myself where I've played for a season and haven't received a cap, but I've taken loads from the training, and it nearly just makes you hungrier and it makes that one stronger. And yeah, I couldn't, like, every single person who was in training with us this year was unbelievable and pushed every person. Like, that's what happens. You always have people chomping at the bit in your position behind you. And I think that was really evident this year. There was big competitions up for places. And yeah, I suppose, like, to set the tone on that Thursday before the intro, and that defensive team put up a huge shift, I was like, this is absolutely class. It's class, and there's something special here.
Yeah, that's so exciting to hear. Definitely to think about as well the future, as you said, of the clubs and the province as well, of course. Talk to me about Matt Brown and his backroom staff. You kind of mentioned them already and the impact they've made this season. What, from your, I suppose, even all the players' perspective, what has impressed you most or maybe made the most impact in terms of the way they've gone about getting you ready for all of these challenges?
Yeah, I think like when you're in such a tight window, there's really only kind of so much you can do. So you have to be real smart with your time. There was a big focus at the start of our training around the culture side of things. Mm-hmm. So we had a couple of days, we did like a team high rocks together, which was great crack. And then we did a little bit of a hunt around Limerick, and we were trying to find our way to back to the hurlers. So that was one team bonding day. And a second team bonding day, which was incredible, was we were out in Old Crescent, and we did a little bit of an open training session out there, and some young girls who played rugby in Old Crescent and other clubs were down then, and we got to spend a little bit of time with them. We did a session with them and just kind of, you know, lifted them up in lineouts, and I suppose showed them the fun of the game and what it can bring. And then we also had the opportunity to sit down with three retired players from Munster from a couple of different generations and hear their stories and hear about what the game meant to them, where the game was back when they were playing, like down to maybe not having kit throughout the year or maybe not having meals and stuff like that after training, whereas now obviously we're privileged enough to have those things. But it was really incredible to first of all look back and see how far it's come, and to see the women who were in the jersey before us, but then also in that same day to kind of have the future ahead of us. And that was the first time in my time playing with Munster that we had maybe like that little bit of an open training session and got to interact with young players. And I think that was really special. So there was a big kind of push on that culture side of things. And we did a little bit of a culture meeting as well, where we spoke about what we wanted to get out of the season, the values of the group, and created a culture code. And that was actually something we referred to before every match day in our pre-match meeting. So, and we'd sign in every day, every match day, we would sign into that and say, right, we're signing ourselves up to our honesty, connection, respect that we have for one another. And I think that really pulled through, and that was really important. In a short amount of time, we managed to get those kind of three pieces across the line. And then just otherwise from two big things I'm very big on would be communication and honesty. And I thought that was really good throughout the season. We had very clear idea of our three attack points, three defence points, some breakdown points going into each fixture. And then upon review, it was the same thing. So yeah, communication was really clear, as well as like honesty around where we were at as a squad, where we needed to go. So I think, yeah, those three pieces, probably culture, communication, honesty, were massive this season. And I really enjoyed. They're probably my favourite parts of the season, because you really get to see some of the girls' personalities come out and stuff like that, which it's, as I've said about six times, it's a real short window. So it is kind of getting down to business quickly, but it was special to have a couple of days where we did get to enjoy one another off the pitch as well.
Yeah, and all things, again, as you mentioned, that these players can take back to their own clubs and implement those practices even at grassroots level, which is going to only improve things. That's fantastic to hear. Of course, we still have lots of exciting women's rugby coming up over the next couple of weeks with the World Cup happening at the moment. I know you were at that game, as you said, against the Irish girls against New Zealand last weekend. A really tough battle out there, of course, not the result that they would have wanted. What was your kind of take on it? I guess, obviously, being quite close with a lot of the girls and probably getting a chance to speak to them after as well.
Yeah, like, look, it was an incredible occasion. There was 30,000 people in the stands in Brighton. And I know that's probably the most that maybe all the girls there have played in front of. And I think there was a really big build up ahead of this match. There was a big point around we'd beaten New Zealand last time. And I think that expectation was said again, like, can we do that again? But I, like you said, like, the girls definitely would have, I suppose, New Zealand were so impressive on the day, and there was probably bits and pieces that the Irish girls would have preferred to, or have wanted to go different there. You know, I think that was evident, and they would have been disappointed coming off the field maybe. But I think the main thing is that quarterfinal is lying ahead next weekend, and what happened on the weekend, you know, it's some of those things that happened in the game, whether that's around set piece or maybe our defensive structure, or, you know, like, maybe different players going off injured and actually having to react. Like, those learnings are so incredibly important to bring into this weekend. And, like, you know, the big focus really should be on this weekend. It's a quarterfinal of a World Cup. Of course, you can't back down to the challenge that was set against New Zealand. And I don't think that we did at all. But I think that there'll be learnings to take from it that will really stand to us ahead of France week. And just, you know, individual and team things that the girls will be grateful that they got to experience ahead of France as well. There is no doubt in saying that, like, you know, New Zealand are one of the best teams in the world. And the girls would like to be competing with them like they did in WXV. But I think that the focus really has to kind of shift, look at the learnings there and shift to this weekend, which is really the very big thing around, you know, Ireland being in a World Cup quarterfinal. And I know there'll be plenty of learnings to take, and some positives too from that game against New Zealand. But as a whole for women's rugby, like, what an incredible occasion. The atmosphere was insane. I've never seen so much travelling support, I feel, for an Irish team. There was, you know, I'd turn a corner and say, oh, they must be family. But we met so many people that were like, no, we're just here to support the girls and we love women's rugby. And I think that was a really special piece about the game as well. I think there's plenty to take from the weekend, but, you know, the focus should really be on the quarterfinal this weekend.
For sure. And it sounds like maybe in a way it'll light an even bigger fire, I guess, under the girls. They'll want to be coming back from that. And as you said, taking the learnings and implementing them straight away, probably against France, where they're, of course, going to be a challenge as well, that they'll almost want to prove to themselves, I suppose, more than anyone else, that they can get back to those kind of performances that they're happier with earlier in the competition.
Definitely. And, like, you know, these occasions are huge. Like, I thought there was a huge amount of build up to the New Zealand game in the media and, you know, it's around the squad and everything. And, like, the occasion sometimes can be really difficult. And I think as well, against a team like New Zealand that I think Ireland have only played a handful of times, like, mm-hmm. it's a team you're not familiar with, you know, and they play a completely different style of rugby than maybe you'd see over in Europe. But I think this weekend, it being a quarterfinal, we are playing a team that the girls will be more familiar with in France. So there's, you know, we'd have a bunch more of analysis done on French sides over the last number of years than we would on a New Zealand side. And I do think, yeah, like you said, like, it'll be lighting a fire under the girls from the weekend, because there's going to be parts of that game they're really not happy with and they'll say, we can't let that happen again. So I've no doubt they're going to come out absolutely fighting this weekend again. And yeah, I can't wait to see it. I'm going to head over myself over to Exeter. So it'll be a class occasion once again. And I've no doubt that the fight is going to be incredible. And I can't wait to take on France.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be a massive occasion again. Hopefully, we'll get massive support again. I think there has been an incredible level of, you know, this green wave is really a thing. It's not just a marketing slogan. It's very much people showing up for the girls, which is fantastic to see. So hope you enjoy the game and that we get the results that we are looking for. And thanks as always for chatting to us on the Big Red Bench.
Thank you for having me. It's great. So thanks a million, Sarah.
All right, that was our own Sarah McKenzie Foley speaking to Munster captain Maeve O'Leary. Don't go anywhere, plenty more to come in the second half. Big Red Bench, Dan Casey here with you to the world of GAA now. And it was announced during the week Cork GAA would have Daniel Lane as their new operations manager. Our very own Ger McCarthy got the inside scoop with him.
Now on Cork's Red FM's Big Red Bench, we are delighted to be joined on the line by the new Cork GAA Operations Manager, and here to explain just what that role entails and how he has been working for Cork County GAA County Board for the last 3 years is Daniel Lane. Daniel, you're very welcome to the bench. How are you?
Thanks, sure. Very well. Very well now, Alistair.
Congratulations on your appointment as Cork GA Operations Manager. Simple one to start, Daniel, and I'm sure people have been plaguing you already. What exactly does the Cork GA Operations Manager have to do?
I suppose really, Ger, it's broad. It's you know, it encompasses a lot of different things. I suppose the main pillars of it really are, you know, the clubs, the units such as the divisions, and of course the intercounty teams. They'd be the three main pillars of it. Of course, you know, the role, and I suppose the time of the year and the seasonal changes as things change throughout the year. You know, at the start of the year, you have a big focus, of course, on intercounty. You know, at the start of the year, intercounty. Then it moves, once intercounty ends, really, it moves straight into the club season and club fixtures and all that goes with that, disciplinary matters, venues, etc. And then it moves kind of in. Then once the match is finished, it's amazing. You know, it moves straight in into AGM time, voting in clubs, queries on rules. Then, of course, it ends in a convention in December with the draws and the championship draws. And, of course, then the couple of weeks of planning the master fixture plan for the year after. So, you know, that you could break down the role in those different areas as the months go on through the year. So that's, you know, and as operations manager, you would have, you know, a lot of dealings with all, obviously, with every part of that goes on throughout the year.
Yeah, even the way you've described it, Dan, you're going to be busy. It's an incredibly busy position. It's administrative. It's dealing with tickets. It's dealing with fixtures, as you said. Then there's the intercounty straight into the club and everything that goes with it. You've been at this for 3 years. You haven't just started. You were 3 years from your time at Bride Rovers and then with East Cork Division and with Imo Kelly. But look, let's be honest, the county board gets a bad rap in every county, not just Cork, okay? It's an easy target when things are going badly. Cork GA also has the added, I suppose, concerns with ongoing financial concerns, and also the woes with the Cork Intercounty and underage football teams. Why would you take on a role like this? Why would you take on a role over the last 3 years that I would imagine there's not an awful lot of thanks involved, but there's a huge amount of work? It does seem at times like a very thankless role when you're on the county board, or am I wrong?
I suppose, look, firstly, Ger, it's a huge honour. I mean, it's a huge honour to you know, and it was a great privilege to wake up every day and head for Super Value Park, Equive, and the offices there. I suppose this is my way maybe of representing Cork, if you could take it that way. But yeah, like, to be fair, I think the Cork County Board and all county boards, as you say, get a bad rap, but I think it's an unfair statement, really. I suppose at times with Cork, you know, there's a huge amount of good work going on, and I see it every day in my previous role as an office administrator within the Cork GA. There's a huge amount of work that's going on behind the scenes by a huge amount of volunteer people, obviously, you know, staff as well. The huge amount of work that's going on, you know, right throughout, you know, the finance side, the commercial side, you know, of course, then you've coaching games department, which is a huge area. And there's a fierce amount of good work going on. And, you know, to be part of that is a great privilege, sure. You know, there is challenges and, you know, maybe unfairly, Cork GA, the kind of, I suppose, the stadium debt and all that, you know, is something that gets pointed at the Cork County Board an awful lot, and maybe unfairly, you know, there's huge work going on in relation to the stadium, and as our CEO Kevin O'Dunn would always say, making the stadium sweat, you know, events, you know, working on concerts, other sports, we're very welcome to other sports as well. So it's, you know, we're always working on, you know, every day to improve things, be it on the field and off the field. So I think unfairly we get a better opinion, but there's huge amount of good work going on by voluntary people and staff, coaches, players, etc., throughout the county to make Cork GA better. That's all we want every day, Ger, when we get up every day, is to make Cork GA better. And if we can just get 1% better every day, every week, that'll all compound, Ger, and please God, we'll see the which we are, and in many respects, seeing the benefits of it on the field and off the field.
Yeah, look, you're clearly passionate about the GA. That comes through just even from speaking to you now, Daniel. And obviously, as I said, when you take on a role like this, it's pressure filled. There's a huge amount of work to be done, but it too often it's forgotten about all those, that extra work that has to go on just to keep the thing going. Can I put it to you that your father, Gerlain, who's well known in Cork GAA circles from his previous roles with Cork GAA, how much of an influence has he been on you throughout this path from Bride Rovers to the East Cork Division, then Tim O'Kelly, and now to the full-time role as Cork GAA Operations Manager?
Yeah, sure. Look, my father, Gerlain, he's a huge background himself in GAA, I suppose, administratively, a bit like myself, maybe. I'd say he'd admit he wasn't the greatest player in the world himself, but, you know, we all find our path. It was a huge influence to me, I suppose, from growing up. All I remember growing up was going to matches, be it with Bride Rovers, and of course, my father was chairman of the East Cork board for 10 years as well. So, you know, I grew up in great times of following, you know, my club Bride Rovers from the junior ranks right up to senior throughout the, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s, and of course as well at that time Imakili were, you know, on a crest of a wave that time, 97, 98 and 2001 finals, and they were great days, and I suppose that time had a huge influence on me. You know, going to games, meeting people, it was a huge, you know, being surrounded by great players and great backroom that time, the great Shawnee O'Leary and the likes, and, you know, the huge influence on me in my own career then, getting involved. You know, I became, you know, I kind of had a few maybe injuries early on in my career at a young age, and I got into coaching, and from there kind of led on to being secretary of my club, which I had two separate stints as secretary of my club, thankfully, and it was a huge honour. And then, of course, I became secretary of the division in Imakili, which was a massive honour as well for me, I suppose, following in Dad's footsteps there. And, you know, following great people, the likes of Tracy Kennedy, you know, Willie Ring, who held that role for a long time, is, you know, a great mentor of mine even today. You know, so they were huge influences on me, just being surrounded by those type of people on, you know, weekly basis as a young boy going around to matches. It was, you know, the influence that those people have had on me is certainly, I take a lot of that with me. Yeah,
and that's, again, clear from the way you're speaking about it, your passion for the game. You even sound a bit like Gerlain, to be quite honest with you. I have to just realise that there now, a small bit, but that's not surprising. Look, Daniel, you've given yourself to Cork GAA. You've been involved now for the last 3 years. As we said, you've taken on a new role, Cork GAA Operations Manager, into next year and beyond. There are huge challenges facing Cork GAA, which we've already spoken about. But I think it's good that people hear from somebody on the county board and hear why the likes of Daniel Lane wants to get behind Cork GAA, wants to help Cork GAA move forward, and is giving up all their time and is doing so and is making a career out of it. Is there immediate goals that you've got for the particular role? Is there long-term goals? Or is it just like you said, go in every day and just get that percentage better every single day and help Cork GAA move forward?
Yeah, I think, look, there's always goals, and I think in fairness to Kevin O'Donovan, I suppose a big goal that we have currently, I suppose, is around fixtures and visibility of our games. I don't think it's really known, but all in Cork, there's over 14,000 matches played in Cork between Rebel Oak schools and adult level. And I suppose it's creating a visibility. We have a very good structure now with Rebel Oak. I am under leadership of their chairman, Peter Watson, and their regional committees, and also then into our adult level, of course, you know, our master fixture plan, which we're very proud of every year in relation to the visibility and the certainty that we're giving our players. And as part of that now, we want to include our schools, our post-primary school games, you know, the Cork post-primary schools, I suppose, led by Neil O'Keefe for a long number of years. Neil has recently retired. And there, we want to bring that now, I suppose, more in-house in relation to the visibility of our schools' games, Simcox Cup, O'Callaghan Cup. These deserve the profile of, you know, being seen as under Cork GAA. And, you know, I suppose over the last number of years, in particular around the football, there's been, you know, people saying that, you know, Cork GAA hadn't really much control over the schools' games. So we want to change that a little bit. Bring it more in-house, have more visibility. When you look at the Cork website every day, you can see exactly, you know, where your school are playing on that day, where your club games are, and just create a better profile for our schools and on the short term And we're meeting with our post-primary schools committee next week. The games are starting in earnest thereafter, week on week on week. So it's just, for, I suppose, in a short-term goal, the schools and our post-primary schools is something we're working hard on at the moment with the coaching games department too, led by Niall Toomey. So just creating more visibility around our schools' games, more certainty as well for those players. You know, those players have a lot going on between exams. You know, they're maybe part-time jobs and that as well, and they're playing with their clubs. So the more certainty we can give our players across the board at all levels, adult, school and at Rebel Oak, I think Cartier will only benefit for that in the years to come.
Hopefully so, Daniel, both on and off the pitch. Look, congratulations on your appointment as the new Cork County Board GA Operations Manager. You are going to be one busy man over the next couple of years, but I think you know you are. But from everybody here on the Big Red Bench, we really appreciate you taking the time to speak to us, and we wish you all the best, genuinely wish you all the best in your new role.
Thanks very much, sir. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Now, things aren't going amazingly well for Man United at the moment. One Man United fan, however, decided to take on a challenge that would test him both physically and mentally. And the challenge is to not cut his hair until Man United win 5 games in a row. He is now on day 343 of the challenge. And I think he started somewhere in that losing streak on like day 200. So it's been a fair while. And as you can imagine, the hair is some mop. You can go have a look at it on his Instagram page at the United Strand, a page with over 325,000 followers just on that social media page of his alone. Now, on the week of the Manchester Derby, that game, of course, tomorrow, no better time to talk to him. Enjoy.
Look, Frank, how did this whole thing come about from your beginnings as a Manchester United fan and then onto the hair project?
So, yeah, I've been a Man United fan my entire life. My family are split between Liverpool fans and Man United fans. So it was, you were either one or the other. And I went down the route of being a Man United fan. So, yeah, which was all good in the early days throughout my childhood. Some very fond memories, lots of success. And then, yeah, we haven't been going quite as well recently. But, yeah, I started this hair challenge of not cutting my hair until Man United win 5 games in a row. Because yeah, we were going through a bit of a tough time and, I wanted to spread some humor and kind of positivity to other Man United fans, also going through a bit of a tough time. So, the only thing is I didn't expect it to go on for as long as it has.
is this a full-time job for, you know, social media?
Yeah. So the thing is I actually, so I had a daughter 15 months ago and my partner's from Spain. And so we were living in the UK. We sold all our stuff. We, you know, got some savings together and we were like, we're going to go over, move to Spain. It's a bit cheaper to live over here. And basically we're going to spend as much time with our daughter as we possibly can, which has been really nice. And I think that's really how it came about, because if I was working full time and stuff, I probably wouldn't have started it, but it was one of those things where it was like, we were kind of just hanging out and stuff. And I thought, oh, I'll just do this funny thing that will go on for a few months. And, so it definitely wasn't meant to be like a full-time job or anything. I definitely didn't consider myself as a content creator of any kind. It all just kind of happened accidentally. But it seems like now there's, I suppose, an opportunity there to kind of continue.
Is your partner more hopeful for United's results rather more than yourself even?
Yeah, I think all my family are a bit like, come on now, you know, but no, they're all supportive and just, yeah, laughing along with everyone else.
Is there a point where you just have to get it trimmed? We're talking like, if it goes into 1,000 days, is there just a point where it's like, okay?
No, I've come this far now. I think if I was going to quit, I would have quit already. I think we've come this far. I've got to see it till the end now.
Does the hair growth slow down over time, or will it continue its trajectory?
I think we'll find out together, probably. Yeah, no, I'm not sure.
What day are we on now? We're only on a full year, aren't we?
It's 320, is it? No, 332 today. Day 332 today.
Nearly there. When do you think? Is there a point? I'm sure you've probably looked. Do you think your pain might end?
I think there's the end of November into the middle of December. There's kind of a run of games that look hopeful. I think that the only thing is obviously there are still FA Cup games to come, and I can't remember when they're going to be scheduled for. But obviously, if it's in the middle of that, it could either make it a lot easier or a lot harder. So yeah, we're going to kind of have to see, I suppose. That's the thing with cup games. I think that around that kind of time, I'm still optimistic. Sorry.
What are the fixtures for that period? Do you know?
I think it, let me just have a really quick look. Can't remember off the top of my head. So. It's Everton, Crystal Palace, West Ham, Wolves, and Bournemouth.
Okay, and if you don't get through that period, what?
Then it's going to look a lot tougher. Yeah, no, I think that. Yeah, I think around that kind of area, that you know, November to maybe January, there's kind of, even if there was one loss, but then like a run of other games afterwards, there's teams that are definitely beatable. But we're going to have to see whether they're beatable for Man United at that time or not.
Just hope there's no Grimsby in it.
Yeah.
Have you dreamt of what trim you're going to get when it's all said and done? Are you going sharp back and sides or just shave it all off?
I think just shave it all off. Just buzz cut, start again.
Is there a bit of a weight on it now?
Yeah, definitely. And it's coming over my eyes now as well, which I think is a bit of a problem. I'm going to have to start putting it back, I think, in a headband or something.
What have you made of the Ruben Amorim project at United?
I'm definitely Ruben Amorim in for now. I think the results have obviously not been there. There's definitely stuff on the pitch that isn't looking right. But there's also a lot of positives as well. I think that the kind of mentality is kind of getting better and better. There's been some good transfers this summer. And, you know, even things like in the games that we have played, even the ones where the results haven't been that comfortable and not that good. But we've still had, I think, the most shots in the Premier League so far this season and stuff. And, you know, I was saying it to someone else that a couple of those go in and suddenly everyone's having very different conversations, you know. So I don't think Man United are as far away from being kind of back to winning ways than it probably looks from the outside.
How long do you think he will last, though?
I think that the difficult thing is the next two games are Man City and Chelsea. You know, they're two tough fixtures, which, you know, even looking from the start of the season, if we lost those two matches, you wouldn't necessarily be surprised. But on top of already losing a couple of games this season and, you know, some other, not that comfortable results, even the win against Burnley wasn't comfortable. I think, that's going to put a lot of pressure on him if we don't get a result from at least one of those games. So, I do think they'll stick with him for a bit, and I hope that they stick with him because I don't think that Man United can just keep sacking managers and expect a different result. We've tried that a lot of times and it hasn't worked this far, so I don't know why it would work this time. I think that he'll be given probably maybe till the end of the year maximum if results don't get a bit better, but hoping that he can turn it around a bit and we can keep going.
You give yourself any shot in, I know you've won win on the board, any shot in the Manchester Derby, because they're not going great either.
Yeah, no, I'm actually quite confident going into that, really. I think that, again, no matter either team, how they're doing, I think that when it comes to a derby match with any teams, it's kind of completely different, isn't it? It's, anything can happen. So, Yeah, no, I'd be going into that quite confident. I can't really think too far ahead yet. We'll have to see nearer the time, but yeah, I'm confident we can get a result.
Who has the best hair in football at the moment, besides yourself?
I'm trying to think. Cucurella is probably closest to me at the moment. No, I don't know. I have to say that there's more bad haircuts than there are good ones in football at the moment.
Exactly. Look, thanks so much, mate. You've been a great sport. Thanks so much for jumping on.
No worries at all.
Best luck with the challenge anyway.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
Cheers, man. Have a good one.
That was the United Strand, of course. Great crack. But that's all we have time for here on the Big Red Bench. Dan Casey signing off, but fear not, Marty Guilfoyle is on the way next.